Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free, at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
This is Cynthia Ganoff, and you are listening to the Mesmerized Podcast. Hey, friends, welcome to the podcast. I'm glad you're here. Heck, I'm glad I'm here. My goodness, talk about a girl who has not been able to get the podcast out in a regular manner this summer. Whew. And I've been a podcaster a long time, and I've never had this issue. So it's crazy over here. I'm sure it's crazy where you are, too. We just got back from A&M orientation. That's where Brett will be going to college next year, and we're getting him ready for that. And I'm keeping it together pretty well, you guys. I'm pretty proud of myself. And then, as you know, Kate graduated from the University of Texas, and she's taking a gap year before law school. So we're getting her situated and moved in Austin. And my little guy, he is doing all the kid things and tutoring. And so it's just been one of those summers. It's been a good one, but crazy. And so I'm thankful that you are putting up with me. Thank you for you guys that really was odd how I just said that, but thank you to you guys who reached out. I've gotten many DMs from people asking if we're okay over here, and we are okay. It's just a little crazy. So thank you for that. I appreciate that you've missed me. And those of you that didn't know I'm not releasing regularly, well, it's fine. We're all fine, people. I wanted to answer one other question. I've gotten lots of DMs, people asking where I will be speaking in the fall and the spring, or if I have availability to speak. And so I wanted to let you know, yes, I will be posting on my social the places I'm speaking in the fall. And I have a few in August, September, I think October. So Dallas area. I will be in Memphis at some point. I think that's actually early next year. Probably will be in College Station. I'll be in Houston. And so lots of different opportunities, and I will post that on social. But I also wanted to say that I have a few open spots in the fall, and then 2026 I'm booking. So if you work for a church or you're involved in a church, which I hope that you are, and they have events coming up, I would love to be considered for your next speaking event, especially with a new book coming out next year. I would love to be able to share that message and talk to your groups about that. So keep me in mind. Go to CynthiaYanoff.com and you can fill out information there. Shoot me an email. We can chat about it. Would love to be considered to speak to your group. Okay. Friends, it has been a hard month in Texas. If you live in Texas, you know that. If you don't live in Texas, you know that too. Oh, the flooding and all the loss of life in Kerrville. And it's just been, it's been so heavy and so heavy on all of our hearts, and also just with our kids. And so I was thinking about this as I was at dinner with some friends, and we were talking just about how hard it is. And I was going to interview Dr. Wilgus today. It's been set up for a while. If you don't know Ken Wilgus, he's a psychologist, author, speaker, just incredible resource. He has a podcast called Feeding the Mouth That Bites You, which is also based on his book, Feeding the Mouth That Bites You, all linked in the podcast notes. He's also just a good friend. And so we were going to talk about a bunch of other stuff today, and it just felt like, no, let's talk about the hard we've been facing and hearing about the news and the loss, and just how do we deal with that in our own lives, and how do we help our kids through that? And so I love that we get to have just a brief conversation on that. And then also we're going to talk a little bit about anxiety in general and that whole notion that our kids are the anxious generation and we're anxious parents. And so thankful to have him here as a resource. So friends, thanks for being here. Thanks for being patient with me. I'm back, and we are going to be more regularly scheduled with awesome podcasts coming your way. We've got some great guests scheduled. So glad you're here. Here we go. We kick it off with Dr. Ken Wilgus. Dr. Ken, you're back.
Cynthia, everyone's best friend. That's what we called you on my show. Your new best friend.
Your new best friend. Did you lose listenership after that?
We got
one?
A lot of we got some feedback about no.
We got some feedback. She's not my best friend.
It was like, who is that? No, we did not.
Well, your podcast is awesome. In fact, we were just behind the scenes, everybody. We were just sitting chatting about his podcast, and it does really well. And y'all need to be listening because I feel like you just cover all the topics we're wondering about. And it's Feeding the Mouth That Bites You.
Thank you.
And I had to think of every time I say it wrong.
People get it wrong. Someone said it sounds like a cookbook.
Feeding the Mouth That Bites You. But what I love about it, and we were just talking about this, you guys, on his podcast, is it's literally like a library of information. If you're like, my kid just, whatever, I mean, looked
teenager.
At porn or whatever. Yeah, like teenagers. Like my teenager just looked at porn or whatever. Like, okay, let me go listen, and how are we going to manage this? And so thank you for that, everyone. I will link it in podcast notes, and y'all need to be listening. But I want to start with this. Hard days in Texas right now.
Man, it just breaks my heart. I just can't look at it.
Yeah. I was at dinner with some girls last night, and if you're in Texas and you're listening to this at the time we're releasing, you know what I'm talking about. If not, you know, the flooding in Texas, and lots of lives were lost, in particular a Christian camp many of us are familiar with, and young girls that lost their life. And I was with some of my friends last night, and we were just saying, like, I have to look away at some point.
Yes.
And then you feel bad about that. And hearing you say that, you know, you have to look away, I think. And I just wonder, let's start with this. Like, how are you dealing with it? And how do you talk? How do we walk through these things? Because we have all this constant internet and access, yet I'm not sure that's a good thing sometimes.
No, that's exactly right. I think older folks like me, you know, you get more experience, and so it hurts even more than it used to when I was younger. So I've got children, now I've got grandchildren, and so you can just kind of feel that. But I was thinking about when I was, you know, a young man, you would find out about this from the newspaper, and television would have for 30 minutes a portion of it. That was it. You didn't have this, what feels like the ability to look in on this tragedy 24/7, find out details, all this stuff. That's actually false. So in a way, what you end up with is these are opportunities to really face our own smallness and how much we really don't have control over things. And how do we face those things? Those are things to really consider. Certainly in your adult life, is how much is really under my control? Because the things that we continually think about, that I must do something, this involves me, it just can expand and makes you incredibly anxious, kind of an anxiety that feels like this is terrible. I must do something. Well, you know, for almost all of us, there is nothing for us to go do. And it can really, even worse for Christians, feel like, well, what, just pray? Yeah, prayer is a real thing that really moves God's heart, but it can feel helpless. And those are times that I think it's not a bad thing to feel that reality that I am small here. This has not a lot I can do about it.
Because you feel unsympathetic or like a jerk at some point if you're
Right.
I have to walk away. But then you have to balance that with the fact, like you're saying, like, I can pray over the situation. But hands and feet, for some of us, there is an actual task to do. But for most of us, there is not an actual task. And that doesn't make us unsympathetic or unloving or unkind to the situation.
That's right. That's right. And if I think what you're talking about is almost like, I feel bad if my adrenaline system isn't lit up with some sort of fight or flight. Well, this isn't at my doorstep. And this, of course, is what you're going to be dealing with small children. If they are struggling with it, it's because of that sense of how does this relate to me? Children feel things as to, is this going to happen to me? And so part of that is for adults to be wise enough to, in their own lives, be aware that this is, it really goes from being anxious and angry to just properly sad. It is a thing to grieve over, but not necessarily for most of us something to jump up and get in our car and do. There's nothing to do.
Yeah, I like how you just said that, because I do feel like sometimes if I'm not in that fight or flight mode, if I'm not in the midst of the angst of it, then I've somehow become callous.
Right.
And that's it doesn't have to be that dichotomy.
It can even, I don't know what, you know, I've known among young people, it can be a way of virtue signaling that mm-hmm. I am thinking about, you know, the war in, you know, in Ukraine, you know, well, oh, well, you're, it, you know, it's almost like I'm bad for not being anxious and worried and fretful all the time.
Yeah.
And that can't be a Christian's approach. That's for sure.
Right. Right. So how do we walk our teens through this? And listen, it's not, we all know if you have teenagers or college kids, like, it's not like, oh gosh, I should go ahead and tell them in case they hear. No, they've heard, they know.
True. Older kids for sure.
The older kids know. And I'm just wondering, because I mean, honestly, all of us have these moments of like, oh my goodness, Lord, like, how do we let this happen?
That's right.
And so I wrestle with that, right? And but I gotta believe my kids are wrestling with that. Do we step into that space if we're not invited into it? Do we not? Do we ask questions? Like, how do we walk our kids through these type of hard things?
Well, there was a time, if someone is listening to this now who's living in 1950, then there was a time when parents were at risk of doing too little. Like ignoring it, let's not talk about that. But I mean, literally, I haven't met a parent like that in decades. Most every parent listening now is, what should I do? And they wouldn't hear, well, you don't need to do anything, even if that were true. But part of it is to think about, first of all, the age of your child. If it's a young child, then it's certainly fine. They don't need to know a lot about this. They don't, you know, there's nothing wrong with limiting their contact with these videos and so forth, because this doesn't help them. But number two is that when it is affecting them, you really need to first pay attention to your child. So I'm talking about 8 years old and younger-ish. You will find that there are some children that are really made fearful because of this, and they will, for the next 2 weeks, every night when we put her to bed, she's saying, how do I know we're not going to be flooded out? And you need to walk with them through that. Certainly validate that is scary, but here's how we know that we are safe. And then wait for that to naturally go away. A few parents will find kids that it didn't go away. They are temperamentally very anxious. You know, in my family, long time ago, our barn blew off its foundation into our house, and my youngest was really affected by that. But it took time to recognize she wasn't affected because every time there was serious storm stuff, she got nervous. She became obsessed with weather all the time, which is different. That's one of the first times we discovered she has a really anxious, kind of obsessive personality. That's not the same as fearful after hearing an event. That will get better. It should be, it's fine for it to be fretful, but wait and see how that goes, and then see if there isn't, and I mean it, there's not a lot of them, but a few of your kids will kind of lock into their obsessive nature. And that can be a little different.
So if they're ruminating and it's on and on and
for
on,
months,
that's yes. Yeah, then that's the time that like we need to step in and probably get some help. And,
right, but not before then. If it's a month from now and she still brings it up, but not like she did before, all that stuff, then that's fine. You know, that's because life has things that are, in fact, very tragic. It would be creepy if you had some parental intervention that your kid hears about something like this and they're fine with it. Mm-hmm. They shouldn't be fine with it.
Mm-hmm. So what about like your teenager? Let's say, again, as I like to say every time I talk to you, I'm just asking for a friend, Dr. Ken. Everything's fine over here. Don't anybody
Cynthia panic. Has lots of friends.
I have lots of friends with problems.
With
nothing
problems,
here, though.
Yes.
What about your teenagers in your home? Maybe it's just in passing come up or whatever. Like, would you, if you had a teenager at your house right now and you've just watched this whole thing happen in our state that is so difficult, I mean, do you broach the topic? Do you go in and at some point and just say, like, listen, this is hard?
I think it's perfectly fine after 13 definitely it's fine to say, have you heard about this stuff? You know, I wouldn't ask my six-year-old, did you hear about the children? No. But a 13 and older, like you said, they've heard of it. And yeah, I think with that, which I consider a very young adult, it is appropriate to ask them and to really discuss adult to adult, even without overdoing it, your own concerns about it. Like, it's really hard for me as a mother to hear this stuff. You're 14-year-old girl, but do you think about it much? That's fine. I wouldn't obsess about it with your teenager, but it certainly can be opportunities for teenagers to deal with some of the harder things, like what kind of a God allows these things. That's a totally different thing because they're older. Here's another thing. I'm telling you right now, next summer, there's going to be a significant percentage down of children going to camp. Camps that have nothing to do with water, you know, but they'll be kids that are fearful. And what will be hard is for parents to know when is it appropriate to say, look, I get it that you're fearful, but you must go to camp. It is not actually a fear, and it is good for you to go to camp. There'll be way too many parents, I worry, that will think, well, if he's fearful, we certainly can't require it. That's a mistake. Unrealistic fears are made better by going ahead and approaching the thing that you fear. And of course, in this case, it's, you know, I'm guessing that poor Kerrville camp will be, this is it for them. But but how many, that's not most any of the camps. That's not what happens at camp.
Right. One of my friends last night when we were talking this said that she just dropped her kids off at camp and that one of them was a little anxious about it. And she said, your dad and I wouldn't send you anywhere that isn't safe.
There you go.
And the minute it came out of her mouth, though, she realized because her daughter said, those kids went to a camp where their parents thought they were safe.
That's right.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together, because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
And it's that balance, right? And so, I mean, what's the response to that? That we're in a fallen world. And I mean,
if
I wouldn't say
A little kid, if it's an 8-year-old, it is... yes, but this camp isn't that, and it is safe. I mean, you can speak in black and whites to little children.
Yeah.
But at the same time, when they're older, I think it's perfectly reasonable to, if it's a teenager, I would definitely say, yeah, that's a great point. We can't know 100%, and there is such a thing as 100-year floods that have never happened in anyone's lifetime. And nowhere could not be known. That's a different thing, and we should talk about that. Yeah. But that, again, depends on the age of that kid. An 8-year-old, it's fine to say, that's not this camp, and that will not happen.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, so I was thinking about, because I know you did a show talking about this, but yeah, the book we all know, The Anxious Generation.
Yes.
Here's a great book. Here's my beef.
Excellent book.
Here's my beef. Weren't you waiting all day for Cynthia to throw out something?
I want to hear it.
No foundation or fact behind it. being someone who's raised kids, a little bit older kids that didn't have cell phones their whole life, and now I've got a little one, and he didn't have a cell phone, but he has mine all the time, or an iPad or something, it feels like. I feel like it's this doom now around this anxious generation. Like, there's nothing we can do, and oh, they're all anxious. And like, I like that we have the information and that we're able to see the studies and the progression, and we see the tidal wave. I don't even know if it's a tidal wave. I guess we're in it. The waves already hit us or whatever. But what I'm concerned about is it can feel hopeless and it can feel like there's not a lot I can do. We've got these cell phone obsessed kids. And then we've got tragedies that we've got over here. Well, no wonder they're anxious. I mean, heck, I'm anxious after all of this. So my beef, if I were to have one, is that I need some hope out of this. Like, I need someone to say, yes, but. And so what's the yes, but with this anxious generation?
Okay, so when you talk about Jonathan Haidt's book, I think that's the best critique of that is that I'm still not quite sure why he titled it that. Because the book is actually, if you haven't read it, for the last 10 years, 5 years, there has still been some question about, are these smartphones, is it really bad for our teenagers, our children? Well, Jonathan Haidt's book is a slam dunk research of yes, it is bad. But the part that I would emphasize, though, is that he does not leave it at it's bad. He has very specific references. Most of them are policy-wise and government-wise, but also including it for parents, of some very specific guidelines of how we need to respond to this. And I think I was very impressed with the way that he parsed out the research so that he can back up very specific goals, like your kid does not need a smartphone before ninth grade, which is interesting because there was a whole program called Wait Until Eighth. Do you remember that? The eighth mm-hmm. grade?
Yeah.
Well, mm-hmm. there's now research. No, you better wait till ninth. And then for social media, it's 16. And he has a very good reason why that's there. And then I work with parents that are certainly dealing with the incredible uphill climb that is, especially with teenagers, to draw that kind of line. And so I think the hope there is in you can absolutely do something about this. It is absolutely harmful up to these ages. And the part he doesn't get into is that that's exactly what the church is for. I go to many churches now talking about you cannot expect your parents to do all this alone. If you have church support that none of the student ministry here, like I know of some churches that you deposit your phone at the door when you go to student ministry, just like if you went to school, things like that. So community that support each other in these limits, it can absolutely be done. And it's, you know, it was just a huge wake up call as to just how important it is in a thing that's now so ubiquitous that we can't imagine living life without that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I, point well taken in that, you know, it's like when one of my kiddos was diagnosed with learning stuff. And so there's a guy that is amazing in Dallas that makes those assessments and says it's X, Y, and Z. Here's the learning stuff.
Right.
And then I'm like, yes, but okay. So what now? Right. And I feel like if you haven't read the book, but you just now, we're just calling it the anxious generation. They're just anxious. Everybody's anxious. And I like that you're speaking into that, but yeah, but we can still put some parameters around things. There's always hope in Jesus, right?
Like, well, and I think you're right. But that's not really what the book is about. It is about the strain this has put on our kids. Mm-hmm. If you combine that with the other book, Bad Therapy, she's the woman that wrote Irreversible Damage. I forget her name.
Okay.
But she talks about the struggle that we're now having that when you talk about anxious kids, all uh-huh. children are anxious. Anxiety is not unusual in children. As parents, we're also learning this. Oh, no. If my child or even teenager has negative emotional states, then I must find the parental in kind of technique to mm-hmm. take away all unpleasant emotion and or else I've not done a good job. That's absurd. And so okay. anxiety, all children have anxiety. A few have very severe anxiety. Mm-hmm. I think what's happened is we have more and more children in the middle that have moderate amounts of anxiety yeah. that are, it just feels wrong as a parent to say, yeah, I know that you're anxious. You have to do it anyway. Get out of here. Go do it. You know, right. that's Abigail, what? That's it, wrong.
Yeah. Is it Abigail Shire?
Abigail Shire.
Okay. Got it. Well, okay. Here's another question, and we're going to keep him, Dr. Ken, on time. So I wish I could show y'all all the questions I have. I have all these, I want to ask him questions about how we're going to parent through AI.
Yeah.
I want to ask, but we're not going to hit that today because we don't have time. But here's a question, since we started by talking about just the hard things right now and just the anxiety in our kids. Do you think as parents, are we anxious parents now?
Oh, so much so. And I feel practically guilty because when back in the 90s, when I was starting to teach parenting, you know, I thought we were giving out good insights like misbehavior is not the same as impulsivity and things like this that were helping parents to be more effective. It never occurred to me that 20 years later, 30 years later, parents are actually going to swallow whole the idea of there is a technique called parenting that if you know this inside stuff, you can guarantee that your kid will thrive and do well. No one has that. You know, I told you in the second edition of my book, Feeding the Mouth to Bite You, the second chapter now, I had to insert this chapter called the perfect parent, or the pressure of parenting. And yes, parents are they're anxious because they think there's much more they should and can control. I have good news. You're only a parent. It's not all about you.
I think about like my parents, I'm sure you feel the same way. My parents were not anguishing over camp and whether I'm going to be nervous about going to camp because this or that happened. My parents weren't anguishing over whether or not they're getting this right or wrong. Like I think about that and that didn't make them bad parents.
No. In some ways, yes. Have you ever heard this? I always joke with people. I don't think apologizing to your children was invented until about 1980. My parents were good parents. They didn't apologize to me for stuff. It was, they were raising their children. They weren't worried about their parenting.
So what's one old school practice like that we need to bring back? If we're going to think about the way things that our parents did and what worked, and not obsess over, I'm getting it wrong, or I'm not talking out the floods correctly. I'm going to screw my kids up. They're never going to believe in Jesus for their life because I didn't. I mean, you know, those are all the things.
Absolutely.
That go through our head. I'm not answering these big questions. And so my kids are going to fall away from their faith any moment now. It's all over. Like, talk us down a little bit. And what is something old school? What can we take from that we need to settle? Tell us to simmer down.
For younger children, mm-hmm. up to about, certainly by 10, the primary thing parents are supposed to be doing is teaching their children the parameters of how to behave in these different settings. And you do that by being clear, okay, we are going to the restaurant and here's the way you need to behave, and reward when they do well and be prepared with an appropriate consequence, something negative, if they do not behave appropriately. That is always been number one in parenting. And somehow that's gotten lost under a mountain of, aren't you supposed to teach them their inner feelings and kind of controlling their own dysregulation? No, that's not bad, but that's after number one. Teach your children, or as the psychologist Jordan Peterson said, do not let your children do things that make you not like them. And he has this whole thing about, if you don't like your kids, you love them, but you don't like them. None of us are going to love your kid and all that.
For sure.
And then that's number one for parents of children. If you have, as you know, a 13 or older, the number one thing that I always want parents to know is you no longer have a child. That is a young adult that you need to start them on a felt sense of, we recognize that you are more and more needing to control your own life, and we hand over freedoms, not all at once, but that's the sort of like the main thing for children and the main thing for teenagers.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thanks for talking anxiety and tragedy. And I mean, I've been nothing but a ball of sunshine today, and you're welcome, Dr. Kim. Really uplifting over here.
Yeah. What's up?
But yeah. I do. I appreciate your insight and helping us walk through this. And so then now, you know, by the way, I emailed Dr. Ken like 2 months ago and he didn't respond. I emailed him again and I'm like, do you hate me? Are
yes.
you ignoring me?
That's
what's going on?
That's a neurotic for sure who has forgotten that. Oh, wait, that's Dr. Wilkes. He just drops balls. He didn't know what's going on.
Well, I'm going to email you again in about a month and say, hey, we never got to talk about AI and all these other things that are going on in current events. And you're going to not respond. And then
that's
we'll go
right.
through this
and
again.
Then and then 2 or 3 weeks later, you'll write me again and I'll go, oh, I thought you got the message that I don't like you. No, I will answer. I will do better. Give me a chance, coach. Put me back
okay.
in.
Okay. Thanks. All right. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
All right, a big thank you to Dr. Wilgus, and he's just always so wise and helpful and gives you lots to think about. And so I am appreciative that we were able to have this conversation, and I know it's hard. There's a lot going on, and so just continue to be praying for all the people that are struggling through the loss here in Texas, but just in general, there's just a lot of hard, it feels like, right now. And so we'll just be praying for people. I want you to know that I will be praying for you, and you can always DM me
And I would love to be praying over specific requests you have in your life. You can also get a hold of me through CynthiaGanoff.com. Email me, and those will be routed to me as well, your email. So I will be here and praying for and with you guys. And thanks for being a part of the Mesmerized family, you guys. You're the very best.
Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.